Carlos Mendoza said that he understands the emotion, but that particular action of throwing your glove into the stands was unacceptable. Looking back on it, do you regret doing that?
No, I don't regret it. I think I've been looking the worst team in probably in the whole MLB. So, you know, whatever happened, happened. So, whatever they want to do, I'll be tomorrow here if they want me, you know, whatever they want to do. So, I'm going to keep doing this thing, you know. So, I'm healthy on whatever, you know, on whatever to do. You know, I'm ready to come back tomorrow if they want me to be here. So, I'll be here.
Right now is the right time.
I felt like it was the right time for us to, as a group, collectively, to sit down and look at each other eye to eye and hold each other accountable. It was good for everybody. A lot of players talked. That's really good. And a lot of knowledge was dropped. Now we just got to put it together, you know. I just felt like it was the right time. Something in my gut, my instincts were telling me it was the right time to just... Let's just get everybody out, and it's just the players. Let us talk. We don't really get an opportunity to talk like that. You know, we have buses, and then we have team dinners. That, yeah, we have an opportunity to talk, but not like today. You know, you have the offense that talks, and then the pitchers, they talk. But when everybody's in meetings like this, and we look at each other eye to eye, when somebody says something, and you say, you mean that? Okay, I got you. You know, it's. He goes a long way.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Thursday, May the 30th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G, and don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Well, it's never good when I come to you, you know, late week, midweek. We always try to debate what we should call these emergency shows the weekend before the Mets honor a great Met, Darryl Strawberry, with the London series coming up. After a Memorial Day, nice Memorial Day win on Sunday, where we talked about daring to dream that maybe that would be the turning point or the spark. And, you know, since that show on Memorial Day, you all know what happened. Horrible loss to the Dodgers, horrible doubleheader. And then yesterday, all the theatrics that turn what really was going to be just another blowout into something much more, and you know, from a media perspective, is probably going to seep into today and give, you know, those who make their living, like I do sometimes with this show on X and newspapers and online and podcasting, some content to talk about. But you heard some of the comments. You heard the Jorge Lopez comments. You heard Lindor talk about the team meeting. And first things first, when it comes to Jorge Lopez, I think it's very important for those who look back, and you can just Google this, it's not hard to find. When Jorge Lopez was acquired last year, I don't know if I talked about it. This is a virtually very low-risk, high-reward move. It was a $2 million contract. He's a guy that had has some good stuff, had a good season, an all-star season in Baltimore as their closer a couple of years ago. And the feeling was, hey, look, you know, you bring somebody in and he could get you out to the sixth inning or back up Diaz as the closer. Maybe the Mets, with some of their analytics and their pitching lab, could find something in this gem, that, you know, undervalued asset, where you get $2 million worth of purchasing. You get like $6 million out of $2 million worth of purchasing power, something along those lines. So you know, the fact that all reports indicate that he'll be designated for assignment, the big loser in all that is Steve Cohen's going to be out, what are you, you know, a little less than halfway through the season. You know, he's going to be out $1.5 million of Lopez's contract. If depending on if someone claims him, I doubt it. You know, they're going to basically be paying him either not to play or to play for somebody else. That's not the end of the world. Cohen has far more egregious losses. I think he's learning pretty quick with baseball. The losses and the bad money, it adds up pretty quick. And it's like a gremlin. It seems to multiply after midnight or something like that. But Jorge Lopez has a history of mental health issues. And that's not something to make fun of. That's not an indictment. That's not a judgment. Just read about it. The Twins, I believe, put him on the injured list last year to work through stuff. And, you know, something, whether it be playing in New York, his role with the Mets, his frustration with his career, being out there in a, you know, very negative environment as the Mets are getting blown out by the Dodgers, whatever boiled over that got him ejected by the third base umpire. And look, he threw the glove into the stands, and that's a bad optic. And you don't want to hurt anybody. You don't want to hurt any paying customers anytime. But especially these days, you know, people will use any excuse to, you know, harm an organization or a company because, you know, of something they deem as a slight. I actually saw something, I'm assuming it's accurate and it's real on X, where the person who caught the glove, I don't know if it was a teenager or a kid or whatever, you know, put a picture up there about Lopez's glove. So I don't think anybody who caught the glove is going to be upset that the glove got thrown in the stands. But the glove gets thrown in the stands. But look, and then he has this bizarre post-game press conference where, talking to reporters, he's the worst teammate, the worst team. I mean, the Mets have been one of the worst teams in May in the league. And they're among the cluster of bad teams in baseball. So if anybody wants to, like, get mad at him for speaking the truth, as far as the worst teammate, you'd have to ask one of those 25 other guys and say, you know, what's this guy's deal? It doesn't matter. Look, the glove is not the issue. To clutch pearls over the glove, which people will, and they'll make it an indictment over Cohen and Mendoza and leadership and culture. People get mad. You know, look, I'll be honest. In my daily businesses, I've flipped out recently, you know, in the last few days in a work environment and said things, you know, and a lot of that is emotion when you're in a environment where you care and you feel pressure and you have a passion. So sometimes those things are, you know, everybody wants to look back and be, you know, why are they not Mark Messier? Why are they not Derek Jeter? Why are they not this stoic, you know, polished corporate political persona for the microphone? Well, because not everybody's like that. And sometimes that's not real. Derek Jeter wasn't real. He wasn't real. It was manufactured. Good for him that he was able to. You know, look at Jalen Brunson. Jalen Brunson is trying his best to be stoic and manufactured at the podium and say the right thing. I think he believes what he says, but not everybody's Jalen Brunson. And, you know, talk to me as expectations rise with the Knicks and teams like that, and things don't go Jalen Brunson's way. Let me see how great he is at the podium. It's times like what you saw this year with the Mets, and, you know, when there's a real adversity, where we'll see how polished all these other athletes that are, you know, being praised, the Volpes and the Sotos across town and whatever and so on and so forth. So, you know, let's put that aside. It's not about gloves. You know, this whole thing you're going to see with members of the media, oh, this is the worst team ever in Mets history, and is this like the 67 team? Like, come on, guys. Come on. You know, like, let's be fair. Look up and down the team. Look at the back of the baseball card. Look at what is on the roster. It's an underperforming roster. You know, maybe there's players in decline, but it's this debate or these jokes. You know, now we're at the jokes portion of the media, which is good for me. Where now we're making jokes about London and the Queen or whatever. It's back to the same garbage that, you know, you thought with Cohen and Cohen's money and persona, it would be put in the closet, but it really never is, because ultimately this town is about lionizing the players and the teams that they like and beating up on everybody else, because that's all they know how to do. They really don't know how to do good analysis, but the Mets have brought this upon themselves. So you know what the issue here is. the Mets have brought this upon themselves. And ultimately, the takeaway here is just one thing. And this is going to be a very short show. It's not going to be long. It's not going to be multi-parts. It'll be a very short show. And the message is really twofold here. Number one, if you didn't believe what I've been telling you about how hard it is to win, you already knew in this town, but playing for this particular organization, then you saw the yoke develop over the last 3 weeks, and in particular the last few days as the horrible loss on Monday unfolded and then subsequently what happened. You see where the Mets are. They have this huge anvil on their back, huge, that everybody, myself included, foolishly thought money would buy its way out. And all money and Cohen has done is put them in a position from a team building, team infrastructure standpoint to do things that the Yankees have done for four decades and the Dodgers have been doing for over a decade and the Red Sox have been doing for a couple of decades. That's all it's done. It's put them on par in one facet of the baseball situation. It's also put them in a business situation where long-term, with the kind of money that that could generate, the kind of star power that will allow them to sell this team to corporate sponsors and big money fans and big money situations, that basically helps you become a lot bigger than just a baseball team playing in front of an empty junkyard in Flushing, Queens, which it sounds like, off topic, and I'm not going to get into it, some politicians in Queens that really like seeing an empty junkyard because that's what it's been since the World's Fair in the 60s, but I digress. That's all that Cohen has done. It has not removed the yoke. It has not, and I think this is one of the best threads, and I'm going to give him credit over there, over on X, Christopher Soto. I don't believe Christopher is anything media-wise. Let me look. He's just a fan that follows the Mets and plays fantasy baseball. But Christopher Soto, at SotoC03 on X, basically said it succinctly. It said in a very good way on X what I have been saying in my own way here on this show, that because of how the ownership situation went down, the change with Cohen, the transition and the inability to come in, and by rights, by the textbook, Cohen should have came in, tore this thing down, started fresh in November of 2020, post-pandemic, or in the middle of the pandemic, and you'd be 4 years in, and maybe things would be a little bit different now. And he didn't do that. He wanted to invest in a team with good bones. He wanted to show the fans that he was not Wilpon. Went out, traded for Lindor, gave Lindor a contract that we've talked about on the newsletter, we've talked about on the show, that you probably want to rethink today if you had a redo or you had an amnesty clause or something like that. And, you know, you have now, because of that, because of the turnover that Cohen was faced with building his front office, you have basically a team that's built from a couple of ownership groups, five GMs, and three farm directors. And if you go back to where they are from a player development standpoint and a drafting standpoint, you could go all the way back to more than a decade. You've had tons of turnover there as well. And what you have now is a mix, match, mishmash of a roster that has different philosophies and strategies from those GMs. And I'm not saying any of them, and that I'll include Brody Van Wagenen and everyone likes to pound on, were wrong in everything they did. It's just you can't, and I see it already with fans talking about firing Mendoza, where's Cohen, make a statement. You know, they want to fire. You can't keep doing this. This is not a video game where you hit the reset button. He hired Stearns. Stearns made a decision on a manager. Now it's time to see, can you compete and win and align this thing with the farm system, with the player development philosophy they're putting together? And right now the answer is no. So the yoke is real, and the yoke, which was always there, is exacerbated by the fact that Cohen, with good intentions, with the blessing of everybody in the media, the mainstream, with the blessing of the fans who liked it, with guys like me saying it can be done, because it can be, the Dodgers did it to a certain degree, winning and building is difficult. But the only way that the building works with the money, I mean, the winning works with the money while you try to build, is if you have a core group of players to work with. And in November 2020, you had Pete Alonso, you had McNeil, you had DeGrom, you had Diaz, you brought Lindor into the mix. And, you know, maybe you thought there'd be a couple other kids in the near term, the Alvarezes and the Beatties, who are yet to be determined what they are. But you figured there was enough of that core, and even the surrounding core of good, very good players. I don't want to call them component players, very good players, especially as Stearns came in with the Martes and things like that. Nimmo all put into the core of players that could get this thing done. And you say, hey, I could go out, I could spend some money on veterans and component-driven players, build a competitive team that at the very least in a 3-wild-card scenario could make things happen. And it's not happening. And here's where the main point is. Here's where this is all about. Here's what Jorge Lopez really is all about and symbolizes. And it's nothing more than this. It's not about a glove. It's not about the jokes. It's not about, you know, leadership or identity or culture. Well, that's maybe it's partly that. And any of this other stuff, divide, team meetings, it doesn't matter. All he is showing you, the flashing light, like a traffic light, is that playing here is hard. The task of getting the Mets to where everybody wants them to be, whether you want to call it the Dodgers, whether you call it back to where they were in the 80s, whether you call it a sustainable, competitive playoff team like Milwaukee was under Stearns, the pathway to do that is you need core players who embrace the situation that this team is in this town and all that this town comes with and are able to be the very good, excellent elite version of themselves with all this craziness around them. Not just when things are good, not just in a small sample size, not when it's convenient for them or when things are stacked in their favor. And whether it's the Hockey Rangers, whether it's the Knicks with Jalen Brunson who are having success now, goes for them too, because those teams have their own challenges. Knicks are not much different than the Mets. The real thing is, can you be that elite self when things around you are at their worst? Or will you let this town and this team, not so much just this town, this team and this fan base and their intricacies and their nuance and their paranoias and their frustrations and their negativity swallow you up? Because way before Jorge Lopez threw a glove in the stands, you were seeing something that in the back of my head I was hoping was a temporary thing, where it's just a slow start, where the core of these guys, of this team, who had a really good 90% of the 2022 season, came into the 23 season with big expectations and big money pumped in and flopped, and then is now, well not then, is now doubling down on that with a new president of baseball operations who they're there to impress because either they want a contract or they want to show that, you know, we can, even the fan base and even themselves, they want to show that, you know, we're pretty good. They have fallen beneath the heavy weight of this. And the only way this gets better is not a Steve Cohen press conference. It's not another manager. It's not a team meeting. Sorry, Lindor. It's not, you know, the media beating them with sticks or WFAN lecturing you. It's Stearns going in, talking to Mendoza, and honestly assessing who really wants to be here, but really wants to be here under the terms of what I just said being here means. And if anybody is in the Lopez camp, it sounds like Lopez was potentially a problem on other avenues, perhaps. You know, Adam Ottavino said he's not a bad guy. I'm sure he's not a bad guy. He's an emotional guy. I'm not saying he even was a bad cancer in the clubhouse or, you know, maybe he's just a sacrificial lamb, for lack of a better word. But you have to go up and down this roster. I don't care if it's the backup catcher. I don't care if it's the backup outfielder. I don't care if it's a component bullpen guy. I don't care if it's Pete Alonso. If they are not up for this, or they're ready to check out and just, you know, wait for the anvil to fall on their head, then get them out of here now. Because you have Christian Scott. You may have some other young players coming up. You have Beatty. You have Alvarez coming back. And the thing you don't want to have happen here is what to a certain degree happened with Generation K and a young Jeff Kent and a young Ryan Thompson. And Ryan Thompson, and I probably can't find the podcast, really talked about this on a podcast that I listened to probably about 4 or 5 years ago, where coming into that team, the worst team money can buy, with high-priced players who had made their money, really didn't care about how this thing was going to go once it went bad. And going into that negative environment probably wasn't helpful for a player coming out of the minor leagues and being introduced to professional baseball, big league baseball. And it impacted him negatively, where he, and there were other reasons why he didn't get off the ground. But look at Jeff Kent. He didn't really excel until he got out of here. You don't want Scott with the kids that are, you know, the Sproats and the Hamels and the Tidwells or Alvarez or Beatty, Vientos, if he's part of the solution. You don't want them to be the next Jeff Kent. You don't want them to be around this toxic environment, be blamed for the toxicity and the failure, be traded, and then all of a sudden they become an all-star borderline Hall of Famer somewhere else. Because the people that you had in place weren't up for really what this is all about. I'd rather them lose 95 games with guys that really are passionate about being a solution to the New York Mets yoke, even though, and they're not good enough to be the solution. I'd rather them be that than have back of the baseball card guys that may be the solution because they got good numbers, but have no interest in everything else. None. And it's as simple as that. And Stearns and analytics and money can't solve it. It's called good old common sense. Just use your two eyes. They're in the clubhouse. You're not. I'm not. And look, even though the media is, the beat, they're really not. That's it. That's as simple as that. Get them out of here. Now, it's not that simple for some players. You're not just going to go and put Pete Alonso on waivers tomorrow. And I don't think they have to do that with core guys, because I don't think that they're toxic where they're not going to try to be a solution. But you have to be very honest heading into July and the deadline in the end of July, early August. Are they really built for what's next, which is young kids, fresh start, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, that really need to come in here like the reboot button on a computer and start fresh? Actually, you're not even cleaning this computer up. You're just getting rid of it and getting a new one and saying, we got to start this thing. I can't get rid of some of the viruses that are here. That's it. Nothing else matters right now. Part of this season was getting to know an organization. There was the getting to know you phase. You know what you got here in 2024 Mets. You don't have a playoff team. And really, you have another version of last year, and maybe worse. Like, this could maybe swallow guys up where maybe you won't have bleach or golf clubs like Vince Coleman, but you have a team that's very much feeling and looking like the 92 team that could start to feel like the 93 team. I lived that. I was around for that. That ain't any fun. I was at Shea Stadium sitting at games, watching games during those couple of years, and it was negative and it was nasty. Now, I don't think it'll get Bonilla nasty. I don't think that's what's going on here. And you don't have, and I don't believe Mendoza's Torborg, although people are starting to rattle about that. We'll see. I can't really make a... the thing about Mendoza is you hear good things. You don't really talk about him enough. The only time you talk about him is when stuff like this happens. So that's it. Everything else you hear and read about Lopez and what he said and throwing the glove and the pearls clutching don't matter. It's about the yoke. And how do we start to see this organization move away, embrace the anvil on the organization's back, move away from it, and try to beat it? Because they're as much beating that as they are beating the competition. They are the New York Rangers of the early 90s. They are the Red Sox and the Cubs. That is what this team is now. There is no doubt. There should be no doubt. People have actually questioned, not just one or two, more than one, They're not the Cubs. They're not what the Red Sox were. The New York Rangers. You're not a Rangers fan, Mike. You weren't around. No, you're right. I wasn't around for the Davidson years. I wasn't around for the disappointment. I didn't care about 1940. I was around for the Cup in 94. I watched it, but emotionally I wasn't attached. You know, I'm a Knicks fan. You guys know that very well. It's way... The Knicks have over more distance between their last championship and as much, if not more, dysfunction over the last two decades that the Mets have had. More, probably. I mean, look at what Isaiah Thomas got brought... Dolan, the owner, got brought to court. Say what you want about the Wilpons. They were dopey. They just got swindled for money. And they were well-intentioned on the baseball part, but they were ignorant and intrusive. You know, and things are not that bad. They don't have... They have a yoke. They have an anvil. But they're embracing it, and they're managing it a lot better. And it's not even, I think, as bad, because I think the fans view the Knicks and the Garden and the future in a more hopeful manner than Mets fans have in a very, very long time. I think 06 is the demarcation line, not a conversation for today. Maybe a newsletter piece. Because guess what? I am staring down more than half the season trying to figure out how to bring you great content. And there'll be some easy pathways with the trade deadline and talk of the future in the minor leagues. But there's some tough pathways, because after Strawberry this weekend, which he deserves his due in a conversation, and we will have that, and after the London series, which is a pretty cool, interesting thing, you have the trade deadline, the specter of what's next. But once that's done, you're faced with nothing. And I already see, when I have members of the media say they have family members or friends that really want to check out of this thing, that this organization, this team, is bad for their mental health and their daily feelings, that's not good for a brand. If anything should scare the bejesus out of Steve Cohen, it's that. And I said that. This is not the first time I said it. I started saying that the last couple of weeks on this show. So don't be fooled by any of the other noise. The media is going to media. And they look, the Mets opened themselves up. Like, in the past, I've been, hey, it's unfair. They're looking for the lowest point. The media is like water. They're vultures. They're trying to find, create content. Those things still stand true. And they will try to do that with this and make this way more than it is. But the real thing that Cohen needs to just bite the bullet with Stearns and everybody is like, hey, don't try to double down on the core players and say we can keep them around and make it better around them. They need to be better. You paid them. Well, not Alonso, not yet. Well, he's getting paid a good salary this year. You've paid them. You've rewarded McNeil. You've rewarded Nimmo. You've rewarded Lindor. You've rewarded Diaz. It starts with those guys. One is injured. One is lost. You can figure out who that is, McNeil. I think Nimmo's going to be all right. One wants to get paid a big contract. I'm not so sure he's as good as we thought. I think he may be in decline. And Lindor has a lot of talent, plays well on paper, but he's going to, unfortunately, become the face of failure. And I'm not so sure he's up. If really, and we've said this, we wrote about it on the newsletter, we've talked about it on here, I'm not so sure that deep down he's up for what he thought this place was going to be. It's not all about smiles and chuckles and easy breezy conversations with the media. When brass tacks comes, when these days come, when adversity hits, it gets really, really tough. Anybody who lives here, anybody who commutes, anybody who works here, anybody who's around, forget baseball and sports, the environment of what New York was and what it's become, how hard it's become to live here on so many fronts, knows. You better embrace this thing and figure out a way to make it part of your DNA. And if you have a thin skin or you get burnt out easily, this ain't for you. And I'm not so sure Lindor isn't falling into that burnout. I'm not saying he has thin skin, but I think he just wants to play baseball. And sometimes here, playing baseball is not enough. And remember, and I've said this many, many, many times, and this is coming from ball players, not my own theory. When you get paid, there's two things that stress out ball players. One, getting paid. And sometimes they perform poorly with the getting paid part. But when you do get paid, assuming you give a rat's you know what, which these guys 99% of the time do, and you have to live up to that contract to your organization, to your teammates, that pressure becomes immense. Look at a guy like Sean Green, how his career went south after he got paid. Still okay at times. Wasn't the same player. Had to live up to those expectations. Not everybody gets paid and says, okay, I got my money. Now I'm really going to show you. Some people say, oh, wow, now I really have to prove I'm worth $35 million a year. Well, the fans are going to boo me and the media is going to write nasty things about me. And my teammates are going to whisper that, hey, you know, why is he getting that money? I could do what he's doing. It's part of it. That's part of it. But priority 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 for David Stearns. Find out the cancer. Find out if there's a problem. Don't let this spiral into a media mess. If Lopez was the only guy, good, he's gone. You had your team meeting. I heard that one a couple of weeks ago. Team meeting after team meeting does nothing. Wins and action and execution will change things. If everybody needed to get the therapy off their chest, good. You got it off your chest now. Go out and sweep the Diamondbacks. Show everybody that you know, there's no reason why they can't do that. Even without Diaz. Look, Diaz is a big blow. And look, if they're the blueprint with Diaz being elite is in play, they probably win all three games against the Giants. They win the first game against the Dodgers, and they're having a 4-2 homestand. Maybe they lose the series to LA. There's nothing wrong about that. You know, that, you know, the Dodgers are a good team. It's disappointing. And they're still on the 500, but they're creeping more. And look, if Diaz was right, they're probably 29 and 26, 30 and 25 at this point, and are not as bad in May. But it doesn't matter. That's not reality. That's just fantasy. We could replay that in Stratomatic if you want down the road. Very thin line between success and failure, guys. Very thin. But right now, they need to fix this because this will swallow up Stearns too, quick. I mean, he'll have time. He's not getting fired. Not now. 24 months from now, if things are still swirling, not going to look good. That's, you know, Mets fan. He grew up here. He knows the score, or so he says. We're taking him for his word. Well, big guy, you got paid $10 million a year, $50 million contract, or whatever it is. Nothing comes free. I don't even know if the air we breathe anymore is free. So anyway, I call it a short. I pretty much went on for a half an hour. What's next? Well, we are going to give Strawberry his due. So be on the lookout at the newsletter for those who are paid subscribers for a good piece on Strawberry. I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to do the Strawberry retrospective on Sunday. So we'll have that. I have some thoughts. Who knows what comes out? See, my thing is with now this Lopez stuff and how things have gotten so wacky, I'm sure that Cohen's going to have another press conference or Stearns is going to have another press conference. I don't know what that's going to accomplish. I would say Mendoza should handle this. That would be what I would do. So maybe other stuff will come out. So just look, you guys know where to go. You guys know the X handle. You guys know the newsletter. You guys know the Instagram, although that's not the one that I primarily follow. That's the one that's like kind of like the little cherry on top for those who hang out there. I just want to be everywhere where you hang out, but continue to engage in the show. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in on this Thursday morning. You can check me out all the time, of course, at the TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silvat, TalkingMetsPodcast.com, NoG. Mike Silvat, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And of course, I want to thank the good folks on Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your Thursday. We'll be back celebrating Daryl Strawberry this weekend. Till then, take care, everybody.